Okay. Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. This is June the 15th. I think it is. Yeah. June the 15th in 2012. So we are live tonight. We're going to be live for another month before we have to go to Europe and we go back into the archives again. But we are live tonight. And as I said in the last couple of weeks, until in the middle of July, we are going to be featuring the speakers, our new authors and the speakers that we're going to have at our Transformation Conference. This is our seventh one, and golly, it's a month from now. It's really coming up on us.
It's going to be here very, very quickly.
I
feel it. Right behind me, breathing down my neck.
Yeah, we've still got a lot to do before we do it. But it's going to be July the 13th to the 15th here in Rogers, Arkansas, in John Q. Hammond Center, the largest venue in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And we expect to have another big one. We have had tremendous conferences, and they've been getting bigger and bigger every year. And we're bringing people in from all over to be our speakers, but they're also our authors. So we've been featuring a different one each week. Tonight, we jump over the pond, and we're speaking to one of our authors who lives in England. And I just hope she's awake, because over there it's 1 o'clock in the morning. And I did that one time and called over there, and the person they were in bed. They forgot about it, so we had to wake them up, and I hoped it was making sense to them. So, Maria, you're awake, aren't you?
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Okay.
Yeah, hi, I'm here, Dolores. Thanks for inviting me on the show.
Okay. Well, that's what I was wondering if we're trying to get the sound okay so I can hear you all right. Okay, but it's Maria Wheatley. And she is in England. Where do you live in England, Maria?
I live in a town called Marlborough, and it's very close to the ancient sites such as Avery Henge and Silbury Hill and Stonehenge.
It's also very close to the UK office.
But I was thinking, it's
yeah.
right in the own part,
mm-hmm.
because we now have an office in England, and that's where it is, very
she's
close.
She's been there.
Oh, she's been over there.
Yes.
It's close to Glastonbury and Stonehenge and all those areas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right in the sacred area. But you've been living there a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been living here now in Marlborough for about the past 15 years, because the one thing that kind of attracted me to this area was the ancient sites such as the stone circles and also the crop circles. So I feel that the energies here are particularly strong. And that's what kind of really has kept me while living in this lovely landscape.
But I was thinking, you're really soaking up the old energies over there. But before we go any further, let me give out the toll-free number in case anyone wants to call in tonight. The toll-free number, and it's good all over the world, is 1-888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. And we are publishing a book that, Maria is not the author of it, but it's her father's book. And we will be doing another one by Maria later.
Right.
But she's going to be one of our speakers, and it's going to be about dowsing. But Maria, let's talk about that first before we get into some of the other things. Tell us about yourself first.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm a second-generation dowser. I mean, my father was considered a master dowser and taught me many dowsing skills. But I'm also a past-life regression therapist and an astrologer. And I also teach subjects such as dowsing and past-life regression here in Wiltshire.
But
how did you get into all of this? Was it because you were raised by your father, or you were around it all the time, or what got you into all
yeah.
of this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I really got into subjects, mainly dowsing, through my late father. And with my other kind of more metaphysical skills, really with the people I met through my father, he used to have some really interesting people come to the house to discuss lots of different subjects, from healing to the paranormal. So, yeah, so I just kind of absorbed all of his company and some new ideas as well, and have never looked back.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did say he was, what, one of the most famous dowsers in the world, or just in England, or what?
Well, he was considered a master dowser here in England, but he also used to write for the American Dowsing Society and the Canadian Dowsing Society, so he was respected worldwide.
And he had a lot of his own methods, didn't he, that he perfected that are not the traditional dowsing methods. Isn't that true?
Yes. Yes, he did. He perfected some very different and unusual methods of dowsing and detecting kind of how earth energies and aerial energies affect the body through the chakra and aura system. So he developed quite a new few skills. But he also looked at the surveys of ancient sites by other master dowsers that he inherited and looked to the patterns in the land and how the patterns of the land can affect us.
Having to do with ley lines and like that, you mean?
Yeah, exactly, like ley lines and earth energies. I mean, ley lines are widely known across the world now. They're just like topographical alignments with ancient sites on them. What people aren't really so aware of is that the ley lines themselves have attributes. So you could have, for instance, one ley line coursing through the land that is like an oracle line. And you can have other lines that are healing and other lines that are creative. And the ancients seemed to be very aware of these lines, and then they would cite their power places upon them to absorb the energies. For example, in Greece, there's a very famous oracle temple there called Delphi, and that's sited on the crossing point of two very large oracle lines.
Wow.
Well, I know a lot of the sacred places, like Stonehenge and over there, they're on vortexes too, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Vortexes are very common at ancient sites. I mean, really, when we think of a vortex, we're thinking of swirling energy, energy that's constantly turning, that, again, kind of empowers the ancient sites. And one particular pattern that is exceptionally powerful is a geospiral. I mean, it's slightly like a vortex, but it has its own power and rotation, and that the ancients were fully aware of the power of the geospiral. And at exactly the center of every ancient site worldwide, whether it's pyramids in Mexico, pyramids in Egypt, Stonehenge, they mark the esoteric center of the ancient site, and that's where the ancients thought the power and the soul of the site resided.
Well, every single site has, wow.
Yeah, I knew the oracles in Greece, those were supposed to be on vortexes and, you know, ley lines, so I think they did sense these things. They knew they were there.
Absolutely. Absolutely, and they seem to be able to sort of tap into them as well. So, for example, if we think of Delphi and an oracle line, they not only cited the ancient temple or place upon it, they seem to be able to tap into continually to utilize its energetic force. And that's what I think we can do today, whether it's in our own homes or our communities. If we can locate these energy lines, for example, the oracle line we've been discussing, and cited our new schools upon them. For example, I mean, because it's an oracle line, it rules communication. So could you imagine if children with learning difficulties or they were dyslexic, their classrooms were sited upon these lines, we could empower a whole new generation just by looking at building differently and integrating these lines the ancients were fully aware of.
Do you notice anybody building anything using, does anybody, okay, the ancients knew to do that. Do you notice any current architecture using anything like that? Do they build on any sites?
That's a really good question. Yeah, I think some, I'm working with an architectural firm where we are looking into using and utilizing the ley line system. But I think throughout history, people of all different cults, for example, at the Templars and the Masons, and later on, just high-ranking members of society seem to be fully aware of these ancient systems.
Of course, there'd probably be so much energy that it wouldn't be wise to build on them because the energy might be too powerful.
No, it depends on what it's for. Like she's saying, if you have an oracle line and you build on that, and it would help with learning disabilities and things like that, so if people know about them. So maybe these societies where maybe it's been passed down, people do know is what I'm wondering, if people are aware of them, besides you, that are aware of them and maybe are utilizing things. That's why I was wondering if you've noticed that maybe people are, or things are being built on these sites almost purposely.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of people that are aware of them, there's a lot of people in the UK that are, they do try to utilize them, whether it's in their own homes or gardens or for healing centers and that type of thing. I mean, on a ley line, if you place something upon it, which they did in ancient China, you can slow down the energy or you can speed it up. That's the kind of art of geomancy. It's knowing how to kind of easily manipulate an energy source. I mean, vortexes are particularly powerful. You wouldn't want to build on a vortex. There's other far gentler energies that are life-enhancing and healing.
That makes sense, yeah.
Well, you know, in the States here, we have Sedona, where they have the beautiful red rocks out in the desert, and that is a definite sacred site for the Indians. And all the time, they never build anything on it because they were used for ceremonies and for their own religious beliefs, I guess you could call it. You know, they're sacred sites. Nobody was ever supposed to build on that area, but, you know, now a whole city is there. And I know when we go in there, we can definitely feel energy. It has several vortexes right in that area. But I always wonder how someone can live there because of all of the energy is so powerful in that area. And, of course, the Indians have never been happy that the white man came in and built on their sacred sites. But I think they would feel that if they're living there all the time. So what do you think?
Are you familiar with Sedona, Maria?
Maria? Well, we are trying to transverse a long distance, but usually that doesn't make any difference.
No, but you have to think about, see, these different calls that we have, these things happen on, you think about what the topic is. Think about what we're doing here. We're talking to somebody about a lot of energy and vortexes and all these things, you know.
you think maybe we're calling that in?
Well, she's in these sacred sites, and she's in all this energy, and I'd like to get her thought on that, too, when she comes back. But she's in all this, so,
she
you know,
lives there,
yeah,
and she would be exposed to
in
that
fact,
all the
I'm,
time.
I'm hearing that that's a definite statement there. She's.
But, you know, with her living in that all the time, it's probably why she's chosen this field. Besides her father being so prominent in it,
she's very good at it.
Yeah, but because I think maybe it makes a difference if she's been exposed to that energy for so long. Mm-hmm. It's become very natural to her.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's very familiar with it. But we can fill people in on it when we did that tour last year. Do we have her back yet?
Yes. Oh, yep.
Okay.
Are you back, Maria?
Yeah.
I thought what she was saying, sometimes depends on what we're talking about, different weird things happen with the telephone. And here we're talking about energies and vortexes, so it must have sucked you into one, I guess.
Yes.
You're back now.
We were talking about, I was talking about how good you are at what you do, and we were just filling in some time there while we were getting you back, and I was reminding... I was going to let everybody know that you led the tour that we did in Avery and Oh, remind me what place we went to Stonehenge. We got and
Newgrange.
She wasn't at Newgrange.
but we were. She did go to Stonehenge with us and Glastonbury.
Right. And it was really interesting because it showed a whole different side of the sites. And because we had talked about that trip after we came back. And so we wanted to fill everybody in that you were the one that led us on that trip.
You know, it was interesting, though, we were in Stonehenge. I haven't written about that yet. That's going to be in the next book, where, according to one of the past life regressions I had, that they were there when Stonehenge was active, and there was a portal in mm-hmm. the center mm-hmm. of the Stonehenge. Mm-hmm. And we were able to go in with sunrise that day. Of course, it was drizzling.
Yeah, that's where Maria got that beautiful picture of that orb flying over the Stonehenge before we got there.
Mm-hmm. You still have that picture, don't you, Maria?
Oh, definitely. It was so remarkable. It was a huge, beautiful light orb right above the standing stones. It was quite remarkable.
No, it was gorgeous. It was fantastic.
And you took the picture before we entered the circle.
Before we ever got there.
She said you put it on the fence post mm-hmm. as we were all going in to the...
We were on our way. She got there ahead of us.
Oh.
We weren't even there yet.
Okay. But Maria, I really want that picture because I want to put it in my next book.
You have it.
Oh, okay, you have it. I'm going
to
put it in the next
book
where I talk about our experience. But you were dowsing right there over that center, and you said you found the portal where it was supposed to be, didn't you?
Yeah, that was very, very energetic point. In fact, on that day as well, I think it might have been even more active because there'd been sort of a lot of wet weather, and the weather was very changeable, and that seems to sort of change Earth energies to a certain degree. But, yeah, that was exceptionally powerful. It was almost like the energy from that one point could literally go up the stones and way out to high above the ground. It was exceptional.
Mm-hmm. And also, you were letting the other people on the tour use the dowsing rods to show the force that were in the stones.
Well, so they could feel them.
Yeah, that it would pull. It pulled the rod toward the stones.
That's right, Dolores. You can use a dowsing rod, you see, to pick up on any sort of energy. And at places like Stonehenge, what we were experiencing was, when the stones are kind of sighted upon and rooted into an Earth energy pattern, be that a spiral or a circle, the stones can kind of absorb the energy, and they kind of absorb the energy and then they transmit it across the landscape. And that is quite a remarkable type of energy. And that's outlined in the book, The Essential Dowsing Guide, how to relate to that type of energy. But it's exceptionally powerful at certain ancient sites. And you're right, it really forced the rod right over. And I think people were quite, you know, like, wow, what type of energy is that?
But you know, while we're on that, I tried to tell them the story as best I could remember you were telling us about the screaming stone there at Stonehenge. But I want you to tell it because I know I didn't have all of the facts right. That to me was amazing. I'd never heard that story before.
Right.
So tell our listeners about the screaming stone there in the circle, just the outer circle, wasn't it, of Stonehenge?
Yeah, it's actually called stone number 60, quite unpoetically, by archaeologists. But yes, it forms one of the horseshoe shape trilithons, as they're called, at Stonehenge, the kind of quite in the near center, but not the actual center. Yeah, what happened was, during the archaeological excavations, about 50 years or so ago now, one of the archaeologists looked at that stone and thought, it's leaning in, and we need to straighten it, basically, make it perpendicular again. So they thought no way could that stone have ever meant to have lent. So they got a team in and they started to raise the stone. And they did so by using cranes because obviously, you know, that stone weighs about 50 tons of huge Sarsen stone. And they were forcing the stone upright. And as they did, and when it went near enough perpendicular, it let out a huge sound, like a sonic scream, because it had been moved from its true location, forced upright, and it caused the stone to crack from its base. And as the stone cracked from its base, it let out this sonic scream. And the workmen got quite fearful and basically laid down tools. And then the team with the crane forced it upright and then encased it in concrete. And they had to try and mend the crack, which a lot of people felt the sound came from. And today you can still see that filled with concrete because there's no way that could ever be allowed to stand again freely without being in the concrete. It was a tremendous mistake. That stone was meant to lean as if bowing to sacred space. And it was such a shame they tried to force it perpendicular.
But you said he was really astounded, didn't he, whenever it happened?
Oh, yeah. The team that were raising the stone were, you know, they were all astounded. I mean, the stones at Stonehenge have long been known to let out some very strange noises. It's almost like there's a kind of base sonic element to them.
So other stones in there have let out noises?
Yeah, there was a thunderstorm once, and I think this was in the 1980s when Bristol University were looking into the nature of the blue stones at Stonehenge. And they're the stones that came from Wales. And they were kind of taking some scrapings and really kind of analyzing the stones. And that night, there was said to have been a huge thunderstorm, and the stones were heard to emit a sound then.
Was it also a screaming sound, or what kind?
Well, with the thunderstorm in the background, they were quite unsure, but it was kind of a bit unnerving is how they described it. And they said perhaps it was because they were tinkering with the blue stones. But I was at Avebury Henge once, which is about 17 miles to the north of Stonehenge, and I was waiting for a group of people from Canada to turn up. And again, it was a lot of rain. It was on a kind of brink of a thunderstorm, and I was waiting in one part of the circle. And quite excitedly, the team leader came running over and said, "Maria, the stones in the other sector, they're singing." And I said, "Oh, goodness, what do you mean that the stones are singing?" And I followed them very quickly to the other sector, and the stones were then emitting a very strange sound. And we didn't touch them, just intuitively we didn't want to touch them in case we were going to get zapped or something. But that was quite incredible, so I've heard them myself.
Well, I know you said the one that cracked, when it screamed, you said how many miles away you could hear that when it screamed?
Yeah, to Amesbury, yeah, when that the stone number 60 let out that sonic sound or scream, yeah, that could be heard for some distance away by locals in what's called Amesbury, which is the next town over from Stonehenge.
Wow.
And a lot of local people still recall that.
Wow.
I bet he realized he made a big mistake.
Definitely. I think sometimes, you know, the stones, they contain energy on lots of different levels, and sound is one of them.
Okay, right now we're having an energetic sound coming through. Now, it just stopped because I'm talking about it. But it was coming through on this side. And last time when that happened on the show, nobody else heard it but us in here.
Yeah,
and
that was a few weeks ago.
Two weeks ago
we were talking about a person that had died, this woman's mm-hmm. daughter, and it was the same sound. It
exactly
sounded just like
sound.
That.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And nobody else could hear it. And our guest couldn't hear it, and Don couldn't hear it in the studio.
Right.
You didn't hear it just now, did you, Maria?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it almost sounds like a stringed instrument. Somebody going back and forth on one string, very very fast. It's very musical. And then you're talking about the Singing Stones and all musical sounds,
wow.
And then all of a sudden that started up. It's like, okay.
Because 2 weeks ago we were talking about a woman whose daughter had died, and she wrote this book about her horrible murder. And as we were talking about it, the same sound came in, and Julie said, "That's Joanne.
Right.
She's here."
And that was confirmed later that it was.
But then that's twice we have ever heard that sound.
Right.
And
so,
then I said, "I."
So what are you doing, Maria?
Well, then I said, I wondered if it was recorded when they're recording the show, if they pick it up.
We'll find out later.
Well, Don said he couldn't hear it anyway. It's weird because it started up just when you were talking about the songs making those sounds. I don't think I've ever heard the story of them making sounds before.
Right. And then this was, where did you say that the Singing Stones were? I didn't understand that.
The Blue Stones.
Yeah, that was when I was waiting for a party of guests to arrive for a tour from Canada. That was in Avebury.
In Avebury?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, because, you know, when the Romans destroyed that earthen wall, they thought they had destroyed the energy in Avebury. But I guess maybe there's still some active energy there then. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I think Avebury is very active. And at the moment, what a lot of people are perceiving about Avebury is there's kind of new energies emerging from some of the other energy lines there to raise the vibration. A lot of people are linking that into 2012.
I noticed when I was over there, I felt the energy that made the most impact on me was the section that really didn't have much. I mean, it was the part that they really hadn't worked on yet, and there were a lot of sheep over there, and so a lot of people weren't going over there, but there was something about that quadrant that really pulled me. So do you know anything about, do you know which one I'm talking about, and do you know anything about that one?
Are you talking about, Julia, the Northern Circle, which has got the really big stones in it in the middle?
Well, this would have been the section that the stones, they said they hadn't worked, you know, because that man was uncovering, he was, you know, trying to uncover them all, and then he had run out of money. And so it was like there's a section that's not done yet, and they hadn't been uncovered. And so there really weren't many stones over there, but it was just, I think there's a big tree in there or something.
So it wasn't around the devil.
Pardon?
Yeah, I know what you mean. That's in part of the Southern Circle. Yeah, that's right. I think there's it's known through geophys that there's another 16 further stones buried in that sector. So even though you can't see the stones because they were buried, they're definitely there. And I think they still again have their own energetic qualities that sensitive people like yourself pick up on. And think, oh, there's something going on there.
Right. I felt more there than I did where the stones were uncovered. So,
like the devil's chair, a lot of people think about that, but you didn't feel anything around that one.
Well, I mean, you feel some things, but it felt stronger in this area that they hadn't been uncovered yet. And so I was just wondering if that had any significance.
There. Well, maybe, because humans haven't really been just walking over it, but not really involved.
I don't think many people go over there because it's like, you know, there aren't any stones over, you know, up where they can see them. So.
Hello.
Yes. Can you hear us?
Are you there?
Because she just said hello, so Don will get her back. But that's just it. You know, all these places but that could be something with that part. Yeah, he ran out of money, so he never got to go in there and uncover those stones, so nobody's been messing with them, you know, nobody's...
Well, you know, they have the avenue of stones that goes for a mile leading up to Avebury, but a lot of those were torn down and broken up and used in housing, so they aren't complete. They just have markers for their, some of them are. Are you back, Maria? I thought I heard a noise there. The energy we're talking about is really playing havoc.
Well, this shows you how strong this energy is. And people can explain it away and say, oh, you're just having technical issues and stuff. No, if you notice the pattern that's happening here, it's look what we're talking about. I'm surprised we didn't have anything going on last week with Sherry's call. But look what we're talking, and like I said, Maria is in this all the time, so you know she's emitting strong energies herself, I'm sure. So.
And I think it's interesting that you were drawn to put our office there. We couldn't put an office anywhere. Mm-hmm. We just wanted to have one in England. We didn't want to be in London because it's too hectic.
Well, like you said, like she said, it feels, there's something about the area. And when we were doing that tour... Okay. Do you have her back yet?
Yep. Hi.
Okay. Hi.
We were saying we're not surprised that we keep losing you. Look what we're talking about, and you're right smack dab in the middle of that energy. Naturally,
yeah,
it's going to mess with electronics.
It's going to show how powerful it is.
Exactly. That's what I was just saying. It's like, don't take this lightly. This is, a lot of people will just talk this off, oh, it's just technical issues, but there's a pattern starting here. I mean, oh, yeah, they're coming through. It is how powerful it is, and people have to start looking at these things and stop explaining them away. Just believe it. It is how powerful this is.
Because the only time it's happened we've had problems on the show has been when we've been talking about things like this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were saying, though, you're in this all the time, so you probably emit these. You're a conduit. Oh, is that true?
I don't know about that, but I know what you mean. It is, you recognize the pattern. You know that it's real. You know that when people talk about energy, things do happen, and they cannot just be continual technical problems.
Exactly. You know, at some point, people have got to just get real. You know, that's what I was told not too long ago. It's like, there's going to be enough things happening pretty soon that you just won't be able to deny it anymore. You're just going to have to accept it.
Because it's invisible. Nobody thinks it's real.
Exactly. But
Maria, I wonder, you're going to bring this energy over here to Arkansas for our conference. What's going to happen at the conference?
So. Well, she ought to feel very comfortable because, see, how much do you know about the United States and all the vortexes and different energy points over here?
Well, I've done some tours for people from Sedona, and I've talked quite a bit with them about Sedona, but that's the only area I kind of know about.
Okay, because we are very close to Eureka Springs, and Eureka Springs is supposed to be a vortex, which surprised me. And also, we've just recently found out that it's got huge diamonds. Crystals underground, this whole area over here. So
yes,
there's something.
Because, you know, the crystals everybody uses all over the world come from Arkansas and Brazil. And they come from about 40, 50 miles south of here is where the crystal mines are. But they said there's a whole layer of crystals going right under where we live here.
Right, and they're supposed to be, huge.
So I wonder, you may be
putting
up energy when you come here.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think you're going to feel right at home.
Well, that's
we were just talking about it. Interesting that Julia put our office right there. She could have put it anywhere, but she bought a house right there because we didn't want to be in London. I mean, renting, we didn't buy.
Right, right.
But it's right in the middle of all this energy.
Well, and that's what I was talking about in your intro. You were talking about the energy there with the crop circles and everything. And that's exactly, when we were on that tour, and when we were driving through there on the bus, that's when the energy changed. It was right at, I think we stopped for breakfast in Bristol, I think it was. And then we were driving, and we were driving through Marlborough, and It was just something about it. And then when Stephanie said, "Oh, this is where, you know, the crop circle territory," it was like, "Okay, that's it. You know, this is we're going to look here for the office." And then it just fell right into place. We found the place immediately.
And it's right in the middle of all that energy.
Mm-hmm, right.
But you know, that's what I've done in my books. We found out that the crop circles are made by energy. And of course, they have these wonderful designs. But you know, I've been studying them since they started 30 years ago, and they become more and more complex, but they're formed by energy.
Yeah, you have a take on that, don't you, Maria? Because I know she works with them, too. She was working with us over there and stuff.
Yeah.
We're all talking about the circles and stuff.
Yeah, but 20 years I've been going, I was going in them. So what's your take on that, she said, about the crop circles?
Well, yeah, I mean, I haven't been studying them as long as you, Dolores, so, but my take on it, if you will, is that, yeah, I agree, they are formed by energy, and how I kind of see it, and with some doubts and experience in the circles, it's almost like you've got a kind of energy above and an energy below as well, like as above and so below, that help to co-create the design patterns.
That's interesting. So do you douse inside the circles, and what do you...
Yeah, I've doused inside, but mind you, each kind of circle is different, and it's kind of own signature, if you will. But, I can always fail to kind of as much below the ground as above it. And again, interestingly, the circles, they're always attracted by or to the ley lines and the earth currents that seem to flow exceptionally well in the Pusey Vale and around Avebury and Stonehenge. There's a definite co-relationship there.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
So, Dolores, what did you think about the how they were formed with the energy?
What I think about?
What did you think about how they're formed with the energy?
Well, what I've been told, it is being done with energy. And, you know, when I was in them, it was almost as though, if you look at them, as though they have a central point. And this is not the way it's done, but for me it was always an analogy that I came up with. Say somebody took a high-powered hose, like a fire hose, and pointed it down, then you opened it up and it would be like spread around in a circle. That's always the way a picture that I got, because it starts at a central point and then the grain is just woven around it in that way. That's not a very good analogy, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's really interesting as well, and kind of confirms some of the work that I've done, because where we go to sort of start our dowsing experience, if you will, within a crop circle, is always in what we call the esoteric center, which is like what you're saying. It's, you know, like a central area which seems to have, in a way, initiated the design plan.
It sprays out from the central point. Another thing I found, too, when we have more than one, what do you want to call legs that go off of these circles, is that the legs were underneath the circle, as though they were put down first, and then the circle was put on top of them. So I mean, the way these are done, humans couldn't do it. It's very complex, and then they are done so fast. But I was told it was done by energy. It's definitely not people. And they talk about UFOs, but it's mostly just the... it's done with energy in some way that I guess I don't understand, but they happen very fast. Mm-hmm. Well, do you know Lucy Pringle, don't you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. She's going to be speaking at our conference in London, our first transformation conference in London. And, you know, I've worked with her for many years with the crop circles. And the same way, she said the one they had by Stonehenge, which was the Juliet set, that she flew over there, and there wasn't anything there. And she flew back 5 minutes later, and this highly complex circle was in the field just across from Stonehenge. And it's huge, and there's no way anything like that could have been done by man in just a matter of minutes. That's the kind of things I bring up when people argue that, oh, they're just out there dragging boards around. It's impossible to do it that way.
Oh, yeah, and... I mean, the Julius set, that's right, that was some years ago, but just even last year, a pilot that I know, who also knows Lucy as well, called Monique, she was flying from Yatesbury Airfield near Avebury, and she flew over one part and she was looking for the circles, and about 20 minutes later she flew back to land at the airfield, and on the way back just prior to landing she saw a brand new crop circle. And the lay on it was quite complex. It was going in one way and folding out the other way. And Monique was adamant that that formed in that short amount of time. And when we went in there, we were fortunate to go in there within sort of like, oh, a few hours of it forming. And it was highly energetic. I mean, you came out of there and you felt you were buzzing. It was like, you were singing.
Well, anyway, that's a magical area over there. Mm-hmm. Other places in the world also, but that part of England is highly magical.
It's beautiful, too.
Uh-huh. But you know what I've been told is some people can't take the energy of the crop circles. They get in them, it makes them sick. But with me, I always felt very good. I felt energized when I was in them. So maybe it's something to do with the person's personality or...
It's their own frequency and vibration.
Own frequency, you think that's what it is? That maybe they're a negative person. Who's to say? You don't think it's like that? I was thinking something that is conflicting with the energy of the circle,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, doesn't mean they have to be a negative person.
Well, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. But some of them say they've gotten sick when they've been in it. And they can't stand to be around the energy. But I've always felt very good when I was in the circles.
Oh, I agree. My experience is similar to your own. I feel really good and energized by the circles. And sometimes, even if I sit quietly, when I leave, I feel that I've kind of learned something almost, or that the crop circles, like the stone circles, have reawakened some kind of memory in me, or I've been given some knowledge or something. Sometimes I think experiences can be really profound.
Mm-hmm. It's like it feeds you energy, really.
Well, like you say, learning something, and it's probably something that's on this other layer, and you won't even know what it is. It's probably part of that stuff, like you get it, and then you, all of a sudden later or at some point in the future, you just know something, and you don't know why you know it or how you know it, and it's probably something that you got from one of these places.
Before we go any further, what is the name of the book that we're publishing?
The Essential Dowsing Guide.
Yes, and this is Maria's father, Dennis Wheatley, because they said he was an extremely famous dowser. And he came up with his own methods and own techniques and information. And he wrote this book, but it's more than just a dowsing guide, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the thing that what I think is great about the book is that it gives really simple ways to explain dowsing, from literally from holding a rod to finding your responses. And then to go on and to use dowsing in your everyday life, whether it's for health, looking for things in your home, like different energies, and to really just expand your dowsing experience. And after each kind of chapter, it's really great, because you can practice what was said in that chapter and develop your dowsing skills in really simple, fun ways as well.
Mm-hmm. And do you go into, does he go into the part about the ley lines and the vortexes that book also?
Yeah, it covers things like ley lines and spiral vortex energies and lots of different kind of grids as well, but some positive grids and some negative grids. But I think one of the amazing patterns that he describes in that book is called the geospiral, because that's a very healing energy. And they interlace the planet geospirals, so, you know, you could find them anywhere and everywhere. You just have to look for them with your dowsing rod and find them. And if you're lucky enough to have one on your property, then they are a very, very soothing, healing area. And again, some crop circles are attracted to the geospirals.
What would a geospiral look like or feel like, or would it take? Would it have a look?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it does have a look. It's kind of a seven-coiled spiral. And if we imagine that the Earth naturally emits these energetic patterns, and they kind of go round and round, so they're quite like a vortex. But the geospiral is like a harmonic pattern to very sacred water that lies beneath the Earth. And this sacred water is generated by the Earth. The Earth produces it. So it's very, it seems okay. Very sacred throughout the ancient world. It was known to have been all healing and life enhancing, as it was often referred to. I mean, geologists would say that's impossible. You can't have the earth producing water. You know, it comes from the sky. But in the water divining tradition, no, we say, no, you can get water from the sky, obviously, and the geologists are correct. But the Earth, she too produces a lot of substances, and water is one of them.
Of course, most of you live in these big cities, you know, you're surrounded by technology and that kind of energy of all the people and very the conflicting energies. You don't feel it. You have to be out in these other places before you can really pick it up.
Right.
But Maria is going to be a speaker at our conference. We're flying her over from England, the conference next month, July 13th to the 15th. In addition to being a speaker, Maria is going to be giving a workshop. It's right the day after, isn't it the day after the conference?
No, it's Sunday night. It's Sunday evening. It's right after the conference is over, she starts.
Oh, okay, after the conference is over, she'll do her workshop.
Uh-huh.
So, Maria, tell people what you're going to be teaching in your workshop.
Do you know what? That is really weird.
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, I was saying that was really weird because as I was sort of talking about the geospiral energy pattern, I actually thought I heard something come down the phone.
Something that what?
Come down the phone.
Yeah.
What was it like?
Well, it was just like
maybe the same thing we're hearing. What was it like?
It was like a woo noise. And I said, what is that? And the next minute I got cut off.
Okay, there you go.
What did it sound like?
I don't know. That is so funny.
Yeah,
I wonder if it's affecting any listeners out there.
I was wondering if it was the same thing that we were hearing. What did it sound like?
Well, it sounded like a kind of, like, whirring noise, and then, bang, the phone went off.
Okay, they're just telling you they're here anyway. But I was talking about you're going to be doing a workshop Sunday night after the conference is over. Tell people what you're going to be teaching them at your workshop.
Yeah, sure. We'll be covering how to use dowsing instruments. From, you know, pendulums to what's called an L-rod, like a dowsing rod, and how to set up our dowsing responses so that we can use dowsing to locate things, from mundane things like lots of keys, for example, to water pipes. And then we're going to go on and have a look at how to douse the chakra system, how to douse the aura. And really interestingly, I just did a workshop in London, actually, at the Mind, Body, Spirit Fest, and we were dousing the colors of the aura. And we were dousing the frequency of the aura. So we douse for a lot of different things, whether it's in the subtle body, so to speak, or hopefully some very good energies in where you guys live. Because if it's round crystal energy, we're going to get some exceptionally strong, powerful reactions because crystals are fantastic conductors.
I can't wait.
I can't wait.
I can't wait to see what you see, what you pick up.
Okay.
Well, in the hotel and in the center that we're at, it has pyramids on top of the building. So it's like, wonder if there's something going on there.
Well, we've had strange things happen.
Mm-hmm.
During our conference, we've had strange energetic things happen, so I wouldn't be surprised at anything that goes on
while
we're doing this.
And now that we know what you do to things, Maria,
Don't mess with the airplane as you come across the ocean anyway.
No, unless you just want to make it go faster. And
yeah. You don't want to do anything with it. Okay. Okay, well, we're coming. We only have a few minutes left. Tell people how they can get a hold of you if they want to write you or contact you.
And you have a website, don't you, Maria?
Sure, yeah. I've got a website, and that's www.theavesburyexperience.co.uk. So you can always get in touch with me through my website and have a look at some of my courses and things on Dowson and some of the articles I have on Dowson. And also check out on the website Megalithic Energy, because that shows using a very special photographic filter designed by Harry Oldfield what Earth energy looks like as it comes out of the ground. And it's beautiful. It's like rainbow colors coming out of the ground. So that's really quite spectacular, and I think it just goes to show the beauty emitted by the Earth in these energy systems. We can't see them, we can't hear them, but they're there, just like Julia was saying with the sounds. They're there, and we got to be real about it and wake up to these energies.
Because they are changing. They are getting stronger all the time.
Well, we're just becoming aware. We just have, like she said, I love that. Be real about it. Yes. Stop kidding ourselves.
Well, the energies and vibration and frequencies are changing, so we're becoming more aware.
Yeah, it's our frequencies that are changing.
It's like we can't deny it anymore.
Uh-huh, okay. Exactly.
But Maria's website is The Avebury. Now, that's the name of the sacred site over there. It's AVEBURY. The Avebury Experience.co.uk, and you can contact Maria and find out about her schedule and write her if you want to, and all her things are in there. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be seeing you.
And you do tours and things over there also. We can remind people you do that. That's how we met you, was you were doing a tour.
Yeah, that's right. I do sort of like sacred site tours in the summer months, which are absolutely great. Where we go out to places like you guys experienced with like Glastonbury and Stonehenge and Avebury and the West Kennet Longbow, and we just kind of interact with the energies there and use Dowson to pick up on the different types of energies. But yeah, the tours are absolutely wonderful, and they're a really great way to experience your ancestral past, to get in touch with the land and yourself.
Absolutely.
So if anybody's interested in that, contact your website.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Okay, well, it's not going to be long now, and you'll be over here, and you'll get to see the U.S. Have you been to the U.S. before?
To Sedona.
Well, I went to the U.S. many years ago because my father had a job, but when I was 13, I lived for a little while in Pennsylvania, but not like an adult, and I'm really excited to find out about this crystal energy there. I just can't wait to interact with it.
All right, they're saying we have to sign off, but we'll be seeing you very soon. So thanks for coming on, Maria. And now you can go to sleep. It's 2:00 over there.
Can't wait to see you next month.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
All right, and thanks, everyone, for listening tonight. Good night, everybody.